Welcome to the Jazz Shapers podcast from Mishkon Dorea. What you're about to hear was originally broadcast on Jazz FM. However, the music has been cut due to rights issues.
This is Jazz Shapers with Elliot Moss on Jazz FM. In partnership with Mishkon Dorea. It's business, but it's personal. Listening colour.
Welcome to Jazz Shapers with me, Elliot Moss, bringing the shapers of the business world together with the musicians shaping jazz, soul and blues. My guest today, I'm very pleased to say, is Gush Munday, founder of Bulletproof, a brand design agency with 8 studios across the globe. Having left India at the age of 5 and moved to London with his family, Gush faced a country and language he didn't understand, as well as widespread racism. But finding solace and identity in graffiti and hip-hop culture during his teenage years and inspired by his art teacher to focus his talent, Gush studied graphic design and typography, then joined various design and advertising agencies. Unable to find an agency that did global work with the culture he was after, Gush convinced his art college friend Johnny Stewart to join him in business, and the pair launched Bulletproof in 1998, working 17-hour days for 2 years before landing their first major client, none other than Coca-Cola. Bulletproof now have studios in London, Amsterdam, Dubai, Melbourne, New York, Shanghai, Singapore and Sydney, serving their global clients, including Booking.com, Diageo and Liverpool FC. It's lovely to have you here.
Thank you.
In your own words, what is Bulletproof? What does it do?
Bulletproof is a brand agency. We create desire through disruption. So
you've said that before, haven't you?
We kind of live by it.
Yeah.
You know, it's the premise that all human beings, no matter how complicated life gets and technology becomes part of what we do, we are still very basic creatures. So we desire first, we justify second. Doesn't matter how big that decision is or how small, it's made with heart over head every time. So even if you're purchasing an apartment, for example, there's something in you which says, this is the right one, this is it. You know, you feel it's right. And then your head justifies the reasons for it. Well, it's really near to a school. There's a brilliant pub around the corner. There's a new cafe opening up. It's very near the tube station, whatever that is.
So it's the fast and slow thinking thing that came and talked about. And in essence, you're trying to balance one or the other. But in your business, it's all about go with the instinct.
Yeah, I believe human beings are instinctive creatures and we're led by that. So that's why we create design and we do it in a disruptive way.
And what is it that you're doing? You're designing packaging?
We're a strategy and brand design business. So yep. We position brands, reposition brands. We find white spaces to validate for brands and create new brands as well as creating everything from the brand, the concept, right the way through to the campaign and launch material. So it's end-to-end, and we do that mostly all in-house. So there's very little we do out of house. We've got digital team, social teams, we've got motion, everything in between.
Yeah. And when you were a small boy?
Yes.
Is this what you knew you'd be doing in life?
No.
What was the young... We'll come back. I want to come back eventually very quickly to coming from India, being born in India, arriving age 5, but... In your later kind of teens and as you move towards your 20s, what did you think you'd be doing in life?
I knew it was art-based. I didn't know what it would be or what it was called. So I knew that I had a talent in art. So school, you know, education wasn't great for me. Didn't work out very well. We can talk about that. But so I knew I was good at drawing, shall we say. So I was good at that. And so I focused on that. And with graffiti art, that became one of my reasons that, I mean, I just loved it. You know, I loved that culture. I loved the creativity of it. And I loved being even an outsider in that world a little bit, you know, because there are not many Indian kids with a spray can who can do something beautiful, amazing, imaginative. And so I was a bit of an outsider then. So I loved proving myself in that. So there wasn't really a huge plan. You know, when you're like 15, 16, there wasn't a huge plan. I knew what I was good at. And I knew what I wasn't good at, you know.
Recently, I went on a graffiti and street art tour in the East End.
Okay.
Where I saw Osh.
Yeah.
And I saw obviously Banksy, but other people. And it was hours with my daughter. It's phenomenal. And that's a brilliant way of living one's life. But you decided to someone helped you say, you know what, you've got a talent, but why don't you apply it over here? Do you remember how you got to taking that graffiti talent and converting it into a more commercial thing?
Yeah, very much. So it was my art teacher, Mr. Moffitt, who always kind of looked out for me and was seeing that I was hanging out with the wrong crowd, as you do, you know, and just
well,
sat me down.
As you do, but some... I want to talk about that as well. So we'll come back to why you got into the wrong crowd.
Yeah.
But yes, carry on.
And so he just sat me down. And what he did was he spoke to me like an adult. And he just said, listen, you're a talented boy, but I've got news for you. Talent is everywhere. And if you don't harness it, you're going to squander it. And you won't regret it now, but you will later. I've seen it a lot. And he said, would you please meet with a lady who I used to teach? She's teaching the fine art course at Hounslow College, which is now West Thames. Would you go and see her? So I did, because I trusted him. So I went and see her. And she said, look, I love your work. It's great, but it's very graphic. And I didn't know what that meant, you know. And she said, so my counterpart on the graphic design course, I think you'd be right for that. Would you see her? So I said, yeah, sure, you know. And then I went to see this lady called Linda, and she said, look, I love your work. It's great. You know, it is very graphic. And I was like, I don't understand what it means. And she was like, look, you know, you could design brochures. And I was like, nah. You know, she was like, you could design posters. And I was like, no, it doesn't do anything for me. And then she went, you can design album covers. And I was like, what? And she was like, yeah. It's a thing. You know, you can, I was like, so I get paid to design, what, album covers? And she was like, yeah, it's a whole industry. And I was like, okay, that's it. I'm in. That was the hook, you know, because I love music.
And how old were you then?
I was 16 then, you know. And she was like, yeah. But then she said also, look, the one thing is also school, you have to be in. This is higher education. She's like, so I see you're very truant. You know, your record's not great. I'm only seeing you because of this recommendation. So she's like, here, if you don't turn up, we kick you off. That's the thing. So you've got to work on that. You've got to be here. You've got to be present. You know, I'm not suffering any fools. And she didn't, you know. And so I was like, okay. You know, I was like, all right. So school wasn't great. I wasn't turning up a lot, you know. And
the wrong crowd bit. So obviously, as I mentioned, and as I mentioned in the intro, you land from India, from Delhi, age 5.
Yeah.
You then have to work out what's going on in a country which is cold in many, many, many ways.
Very.
Literally, metaphorically. Mm-hmm. And then is it coincidence you end up in the wrong crowd 10 years later? Because that's not the story of every immigrant from India,
I don't think
obviously.
It is, yeah.
But your story was that, so why?
So I think it's a case of never really fitting in, you know, never really feeling like I belong, you know, at all. So in school, for example, I couldn't speak English, right? So, you know, I could speak four dialects, you know, Indian dialects. I couldn't speak English. And so I remember very distinctly being called out at school and my teacher making me stand up to read, you know, a paragraph from a book, you know, and I can't read, right? And she wants to see where I am, how advanced I am or not, you know. I can't read. And so all the children are laughing, you know, and she's not exactly not laughing. So at that moment, I'm thinking, I don't want to be here, right? Mm. And I'm about 9 at this point, you know, 8, 9. And I'm like, I don't want to be here. And those things never leave you. You know, those feelings never leave you. So I basically ran out of class. And I remember going to the park for a bit and then went home, kind of at home time. So it didn't look like I had basically skipped school, you know. And that caught up with me in the end. And I had it out with my father. I just said, I don't want to do it. You know, I don't want to do this. And it's very difficult, I think, for an educated man to hear from his son.
And your father had a doctorate.
My father had a doctorate, yeah, and really believed in education, you know. So, because that's the kind of, I think, the old school and still the new school kind of Indian way of thinking, you know. Mm. The way for progress in India is through education. You know, you're taught that very early on. And so here's his son going, I don't want to go to school. I don't want to learn. It's not for me. You don't understand.
But actually, we'll come back to this, the truth was it wasn't about that. It was about the way that you were made to feel.
Yeah, way I'm made to feel, yeah. And so for a long time, I didn't read, you know. And so I learned to read off of comic books and then graphic novels, you know. So very visual, you know, and small sound bites, you know, small snippets. That's how I learned. And now I love reading. So I grew up thinking I don't like reading. And I mean, I thought like that for about 30 years. I hadn't picked up a book in about, you know, in my early 30s. Hadn't read a book, nothing. Now I love reading. I love it, you know, especially business books, books about entrepreneurs, books about interesting people. I don't really read fiction. I still kind of read comic books for that, if that's the, you know, if that's how I feel. But yeah, I grew up for, you know, that never left me. Still
but
hasn't,
I was going to say, but it started in that classroom. Yeah. Stay with me for much more about the impact of various things on Gush's life and how that has shaped him and helped him run and create this incredibly successful business. It's called Bulletproof, and he is the founder. He's back in a couple of minutes. Right now, though, we're going to hear a taster from the Michigan Innovation Series, which you can find on all the major podcast platforms. Lydia Kellett invites business founders to share their industry insights and practical advice for those of you thinking about getting into an industry and starting your very own thing. In this clip, we hear from Tarek Ralph, architect and founder and CEO of Catalog, with a Q, by the way, a digital work hub aiming to give people a radically simpler way to coordinate work.
The Michigan Innovation Series. Insights from founders for your future business. In association with Jazz Shapers, with Michigan Dereya.
Tarek, for those listening who are looking to found their own business in the GenAI space, what would be your advice?
I think there's no room for yet another chatbot that helps you do a little bit more than you could before. I think there's fundamentally understanding the technology, how to work with it, and what it enables, and then finding areas where it's not about making somebody 10% more productive. It's finding areas where people didn't have the ability to do things before. So for example, if you have a business that couldn't email all of its customers personalized feedback as soon as, you know, they were done with the service, that's something that nobody's doing today. And so if you can make products that can unlock those kinds of things, then you're moving the needle, as opposed to making somebody who's writing emails 10% better. So that is already saturated, and it's getting even more saturated by the day. There's very little original, unlocked, untouched green space execution in the general sector. So if you just want to start a Gen AI product, I think it's quite difficult today. But if you find areas and if you have insights in a business or insights in a product or insight in a space where previously it wasn't possible because the technology didn't exist, I think executing into that space is quite meaningful and what is needed really today.
The Michigan Innovation Series. In association with Jazz Shapers, with Michigan Dereya.
Jazz Shapers on Jazz FM. In partnership with Michigan Dereya. It's business, but it's personal.
You can enjoy all our former Business Shapers on the Jazz Shapers podcast, and you can hear this very program again if you pop Jazz Shapers into your podcast platform of choice. My guest today, as you've been hearing, I hope, is Gush Munday, founder of Bulletproof, a brand design agency with 8 studios across the globe. You were talking about that feeling in school. How have you taken that feeling forward into your business? Has it defined the way that you view the world?
Yeah, very much so. So from a business perspective, I learned very early on, I want everyone in our business to feel welcome, to feel engaged, to feel empowered from the very start. And I'm very conscious of that even today. So even today, in any of our studios across the globe, if I see someone sitting in reception and they're looking a little lost, they're waiting for something, I encourage everyone to go up and say, "Are you okay? Did you drink? You know, what have you?" And that's usually taken care of, because the first thing they say is, "No, I've been looked after and I've got a coffee coming," or whatever that is. But I always do that. I never want anyone to feel excluded in any situation in any of my businesses.
Let me just ask you a question, though, thinking about that. You're an outsider by your own definition, immigrant, didn't speak English, got pilloried at school. And every step along the way, you've got something from that. You've fought back. You've created something. Are you worried that whilst one would never want to inflict that, and I've had my own version of, you know, racism, various things along the way, just because of the way I look, would you, and I think it's made me who I am, if it's too comfortable and it's too easy and there's too much support, what happens then to that fight and that fire in the belly that you evidently have?
Oh, I think you lose it. Yeah, you lose it.
So what, for all those people, though, that are sort of so managed and looked after, all that lovely inclusivity, which of course I agree with.
Yeah.
Is there a middle ground which you still keep a bit of discomfort in? Because I think that's what it feels like. You're talking about creativity. As you talk about creativity, creativity comes from resolving a problem. It comes from breaking a convention. It comes from creating a new future, which again, you and your business talk about. You can't do that if you're all relaxed and happy and cosseted.
I can't speak to that. I've never had that feeling.
But for all your people, though, the way you want to make that environment, then what?
Well, I think that's a personal. I think that's a personal stance. I want them to feel secure and, you know, happy. But the challenge comes with the creative element, you know, in our business. It's seeking that nugget that other businesses wouldn't do, you know.
So, and how do you get to that nugget?
Well, it's through endless research, you know, and finding that real truth within a business or a brand, you know, looking outside the obvious, you know, starting there, that's a fine start point. It's going out and being inspired, you know, walking. Sometimes it's the opposite of where you are. You know, trying to be inspired at a desk with a laptop is pretty awful. Going out into nature sometimes is really helpful. So that's why all of our studios around the world, they're in amazing, inspiring locations where you can go out and grab a coffee here. You can go and experience something there. You can walk amongst parks and, you know, everything else, so that you can think more freely, because you can't think in a confined way, you know.
And your clients benefit from that, the Toblerones and the Liverpool FCs and the Johnny Walkers and all that.
Yeah, massively.
You talk about what you're creating, which is a space for people to feel at home with. And I've read about you and how hard you worked, and I talked about the 17-hour thing. How has your family experience shaped who you are now? I know you had a tragic loss.
Yeah.
Your son died around seven years ago, as a young teenager. How has that impacted the way you view the world and that you view work?
So, I mean, it's impacted it massively. You know, I don't plan as much as I did. So I used to plan everything. You know, I plan to the nth degree, you know. So now I don't. I plan, you know, maybe a few months ahead rather than a few years ahead. It took all of that, you know, all of that out of me.
Because?
Because I had a plan for our whole family, you know, and what we'd be doing. And that plan fell to pieces. You know, after that. So I just thought, what's the point? You know, for a long time, I just thought, what's the point? What's the point of working so hard if I can't give my family, those I love most, the best life possible? You know, my family is incredibly important to me. It's the, you know, they're my gravity. You know, my wife always says, you know, you're my rock. And I'm always like, well, you're the gravity. You know, because without that, a rock just floats. You know, that's the thing. So my family is my gravity, you know, and so I live for them, you know, with them. And when I, you know, when my son died, I realized that there was very little as an individual I did for myself. I don't really play a lot of sport, you know. I work out, I do, you know, but they're very personal things. So I didn't have a lot. I didn't have a lot of places to turn, you know, to fill my time. And it's lonely in your head. It gets lonely, you know, when you're trying to work things out. So Bulletproof was really a bit of a savior for me. You know, I didn't go into work for 3 months. My team were amazing. They're incredible. I then started to go back in, and it's really helped, you know, focusing, being busy, feeling that you are valued, you have worth, is incredibly powerful when you question everything about your being, which happens when you have a death like this. So it just makes you rethink your entire life, your entire meaning, you know. And I think I'm a lot more balanced now as an individual. I'm more sympathetic, empathetic to people, to issues, you know, that they face. It wasn't that I wasn't before, but I'm much more attuned to it now. I feel that everyone's going through something. We all have something, and so, that's really the focus I have now. Yeah.
Stay with me for my final chat with my guest there. It's Kushmandai being very honest with me. And we've also got him coming back for more honesty, as well as some snarky puppy. That's all coming up in just a moment. Don't go anywhere.
Jazz Shapers on Jazz FM. In partnership with Mish Kondareya. It's business, but it's personal.
I have Kushmandai just for a few more precious minutes. Your business has grown.
It has.
You've got these 8 studios around the world, just over 400 people and counting. beyond the creativity and beyond the teacher saying, go and meet someone and having the talent and all that, that's something quite different, Gush. You're obviously pretty good at this thing called business. What do you think is underpinning that now? What are the two or three things that you think are driving the success?
Well, I think massive insecurity is driving it. You know, you never forget, you know. Yeah. Never forget coming from nothing.
Do you really think, like, what you don't think, I'm not very good at this? Is that what you think?
Yeah. Massively. Yeah. Plus, yeah. There's no plan B. You know, there's no plan B. This is it. This is all I have. You know, this is 30 years worth of, it's my life's work. You know, there is no plan B. There isn't a rescue plan. There's no trust funds. There's, you know, everything rests on me, you know.
So does every day live like that?
Yeah.
So do you feel that pressure that you put yourself under every day, or is it not pressure? Is it something else?
It's not pressure. I don't feel it like that every day. It's when we have these conversations that I reflect on it, and that's definitely there. But no, because I'm so about driving forward. Look, I love people. I love business. I realize that. You know, I love talking about creativity, about ideas, you know. And so I feel very lucky to be in an industry where we're valued, we feel we are very well thought of, you know, and we are paid fairly and well for what we do. So I think it's a great privilege. It doesn't feel like hard work, but I'm hard on myself. You know, I'm hard on those I love. I just am. It's just the way I am as an individual, you know. So I'm very driven because I don't want to go back to that room with four of us in Southall where I grew up, you know. And I'm far from that, I think. But somewhere in the back of my head, there's a feeling that that could still happen, you know. And
in terms,
I don't want that.
And the industry itself, obviously, yeah. the advertising, communications, brand, all these areas fundamentally shifted. There's change happening all the time.
Yes.
We're in the midst of possibly the most important technology revolution mm-hmm. of our lifetimes, where the internet was one big thing, but artificial intelligence is another. How are you going to shape the future of your business? What's going to get in the way of you being super successful? What's going to stop it, or rather, what might help you navigate through beyond the attitude that you've just described?
I think it's the attitude. I think it's just working with great people. You know, I've been very fortunate to work with brilliant people who, for some reason, stayed with me, you know, in the business. And we have some incredible people, a little younger now, more focused on AI, who are creating tools that we'll be using and devising. So we've just been thinking about a tool that basically garners information on a brand, on your consumer base, creates insights which are live through live feeds, social feeds, digital feeds, assesses that information and plays it back through what we call growth, standout and fandom to determine where your business or brand can grow more, where we could garner more fans because, you know, fandom is a currency now in its own right, and how we can do that through amazing assets and standout. So we're already developing future tools which are tech-based that can help us to get to creative and business solutions much more quickly. So it's something we embrace. You know, we never run away from that. You know, so I was taught very early on, you embrace these things, you don't hide from them. So that's what we do. And, you know, I don't create that. I work with amazing people who do that.
Keep embracing stuff. It sounds like that's exactly the right way. So open arms, not closed ones. Mm-hmm. It's been lovely talking to you.
Thank you.
Really, really good. Just before I let you disappear, what's your song choice and why have you chosen it?
It's the Isley Brothers, Footsteps in the Dark. I chose it because it's incredible. It means a lot to me. So it was the second song at my wedding. I love the Isley Brothers anyway. I love everything they do. And I love the fact that Ice Cube sampled it. So it means a great deal to me.
Footsteps in the Dark from the Isley Brothers, the song choice of my business shaper today, Gush Munday. He talked about never really fitting in and how he wanted to make sure that everyone in his business would feel like they fitted in. He said talent is everywhere, is what he was told, but if you don't harness it, you will squander it. What brilliant advice and absolutely true. And finally, the recognition that to be a good leader, you need to be empathetic. And his realization through his own life is that everyone is going through something. Really good stuff. That's it from Jazz Shapers. Have a lovely weekend.
Jazz Shapers on Jazz FM. In partnership with Mishkonda Raya. It's business. but it's personal.
We hope you enjoy that edition of Jazz Shapers. You'll find hundreds more guests available for you to listen to in our archive. To find out more, just search Jazz Shapers in iTunes or your favourite podcast platform, or head over to mishcon.com/JazzShapers.